Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found, but
yeah, we did. We started to burn many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman back with another hour of the Solartopia Green Powder and Wellness Show. We're going to continue talking today about the election of 2014 and, far more importantly, the larger picture of electoral theft and debasement in our country. Last week we had the great Greg Palast on with us, one of the first, the first, along with Bev Harris and Bob Fitrakis, to cover any aspect of the stolen election of the year 2000 and what happened then with the ascension or descension, whatever you want to call it, of George W. Bush to the presidency and the infamous, ghastly and devastating Bush v. Gore decision 5-4 on the part of the United States Supreme Court that stopped the recount in Florida and gave the presidency to a Republican, George W. Bush, who clearly lost, by all counts, official and otherwise, lost the election of 2000 and yet became president of the United States. This week, Bob Fitrakis, my co-conspirator, is kind enough to join us again, and we are going to be talking with John Simon, author of the new book, Code Red, Computerized Election Theft and the New American Century. Bob, are you with us?
I'm here, Harvey.
Okay, and John?
Hi, Bob. Hi, Harvey.
Okay, guys. Let's jump right in. Greg Palast, who we had with us last week, has put out an article reconfirming his findings based on Operation Crosscheck, which was a it is and will be with us, I'm sure, for many more elections, a computerized apparatus used by the Republican Party this year in 28 states, including Massachusetts, much to my surprise, to eliminate millions of potential Democratic voters, primarily people who are black, young, elderly, and poor, from the voter rolls. And Greg's conclusion, clear conclusion, was that Operation Crosscheck, eliminating legitimate and registered American voters, resulted in the swing of at least three U.S. Senate seats. Alaska, where the incumbent Mark Begich was defeated. Colorado, where the incumbent Mark Udall was defeated. And North Carolina, where the incumbent Kay Hagan was defeated, all of them Democrats, defeated by Republican challengers as a result of the elimination of hundreds of thousands of voters who were alleged, shall we say, to be duplicate voters or repeat voters, which is utter nonsense, as we all know. Now, John, your book, Code Red, talks about the use of voting machines, which Bob Fitrakis and I wrote about in great detail during and after the 2004 election in Ohio, which was stolen again for George W. Bush, first time in 2000 against Al Gore, second time in 2004 against John Kerry, neither of whom said a word about the theft of their votes and the election. But you have now, you've been one of the mainstays of this movement, and you have written this book on computerized election theft. So tell us about it, please, and tell us what you have to say, well, as much as you can in your book.
Yeah, I mean, we're all grizzled veterans here. We go back, you know, in the computer voting age pretty much to the beginning of it. And, you know, I'd have to say that Greg is it's not is Greg wrong or is Greg right or am I wrong or am I right? It's not either or, it's both and. In terms of the mechanisms by which a shrinking minority has maintained and strengthened its control, its grip on this country, you know, you can almost picture the strategists, and I might as well say Karl Rove and company, sitting down in a room and saying, okay, you know, here's what our numbers are. Here's what we're dealing with. You know, Roy Teixeira just wrote the book, The you know, Coming Democratic Majority or whatever the title was, and he's not wrong. We have all this influx of immigrants and young voters, and our numbers are getting worse and worse. Our base is shrinking. We're gonna, you know, so how do we keep control of this country as a permanent minority? How do we achieve permanent majority rule?
And when you're talking about the permanent minority, you're talking about the Republican Party primarily and the corporations and multi-billionaires that they represent.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they've been more naked about it of late. I mean, there was some pretense under Bush, if you remember, compassionate conservatism and whatnot, and now it's just basically we are the 1%, get the hell out of our way. And you know, it's hard to imagine in a democracy that that you can sell that brand successfully. So the idea is, how do we knock off enough of our opponents' voters through voter suppression, through purging of voter rolls, through voter ID? How do we group them all in little sort of enclaves through gerrymandering so that their votes will be concentrated, or, you know, if they won't be carry much weight, ideally with gerrymandering, if you can create a district that's basically 100% of your opponent's voters, and then you set your own districts up so that you kind of win 52-48 or 55-45, you can win five or six districts to each one of theirs with the same number of voters, and that's exactly what's been done. If you look at a state like Pennsylvania, where the Democrats won a majority of the statewide votes for the House in 2012 and came away with five of the 18 seats. So, you know, you
well,
have,
we have
all
the
these
same
various
and Bob Petrakis, what's the number in Ohio?
I'm sorry?
What was the number you were looking for?
The number in Ohio of which has voted Democratic, John Simon has just told us that in Pennsylvania, where the majority of voters are Democratic, what was the ratio of Democratic to Republican House seats?
Democrats won 5 of 18 in Pennsylvania.
Right.
And how about in Ohio?
12 out of 16, even though the state split down the middle.
We're Republican,
right.
12 out of 61 Republican. So my larger point here is that you have all these tactics, but from our evidence, those tactics are not enough. You would not be seeing the political alignment that we have now, the representation alignment that we have now, in the state legislatures, in the House, in the Senate, and soon in the presidency when Alec gets finished gerrymandering that.
Alec is, real quickly, John Simon. Tell
us
who Alec is.
Basically the Republican legislative arm that templates mostly process-oriented legislation, voter ID laws, things like that, gutting the campaign financing laws, et cetera, and basically puts that legislation out in states where they've gained majority control of the state houses, which are now legion across the country, and more on that later. But all of that put together would not be enough without actually changing the votes in the voting computers. And so, you know, for many people, this by now is kind of an old song. We've seen it election after election. But 2014 was a doozy. You know, we're still crunching numbers and looking at the various red flags, but there was huge red shift in 2014. Red shift being, you know, when the vote counts come out to the right of pre-election polls, exit polls, hand counts, any baseline that we can find. And what's ironic about that is I remember, you know, speaking with Bob before the election on his show and basically saying, woe is us, all our baselines have been corrupted. The exit polls, the pre-election polls, they're all right-shifted themselves because the pollsters have been trying to keep pace with this red shift, and so they've developed these methodologies for sampling, like the likely voter cutoff model and whatnot, that are skewing the polls to the right, so we probably won't see anything in election 2014. It'll be rigged, but that rig will have been covered by these adjustments to the polls. And then lo and behold, we see, on top of all that, major redshift, which implies that this election was rigged big.
So, Bob Fitrakis, you want to give us your take on redshift?
Well, really, it's unexplained. I mean, the problem with the redshift is that it's a redshift, and it seems to be working with both pre-election polls, which have a higher margin of error, 3 to 5%, and with the exit polls that often have margins of error of only 1%, there's really no explanation for it in terms of randomness, although some people are trying to claim that they've actually underestimated Republican voters. But again, they're not looking at the obvious, that many people who came out after the vote thought their vote was being counted, and it wasn't, because you have this whole phenomenon of glitched votes. I mean, there's 90,000 votes, as you well know, Harvey, and I know Jonathan knows, that remain uncounted from the 2004 election. Also, many people that plan to vote and are eligible to vote show up, and they end up being forced to vote provisional, or they're essentially eliminated because they're no longer registered. I think you had that problem, Harvey, didn't you? Early on when they said you weren't registered at your address and you had to prove you were who you were.
Right. I have voted. I personally have voted from the same house in the same precinct in the same building at Capital University where I teach around the corner since 1986. And I was denied an absentee ballot having been told that I was not registered for the 2004 election. So I became a plaintiff in our landmark lawsuit in the 2004 election. So the redshift, which is essentially a shift of an illegitimate shift, I guess we'd say, from Democrat to Republican, both John Simon and Bob Fitrakis, my guests, are saying is a rigged setup in the polls prior to the election and then in the outcome after the election. In other words, legitimately more people would be voting Democrat than Republican, as they say, than the polls say as we go into an election. And they use that to stage the dialogue, the narrative, what's going to happen in the election, as they certainly did this year in 2014. And then after the election, there's another illegitimate shift in the outcome, again, from the number of voters who vote Democratic to an outcome that's not legitimately reflective and being favoring the red Republicans. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, it can get a little, you know, eye glazing when you go too far into detail. I mean, basically the adaptation. I mean, you're looking at a feedback loop between polls and vote counts, and it's not the pollsters' job in their minds to detect election theft. It's their job to get elections right. And you know, if you have a certificate of methodological purity hanging on your wall of your polling firm, that's not going to keep you in business. What's going to keep you in business is getting elections right, or at least not getting them wrong time after time after time. At the beginning of the computer era, 2002, 2004, et cetera, you know, pollsters started to get elections very wrong, and wrong in one direction. They had it more for the Democrats, and the elections were turning out more for the Republicans, 2004, 2006. 2002 was so far off that they didn't even publish the exit polls. They withheld them. And this was when, after HAVA was passed, and votes started to be counted.
John, you got to tell us what HAVA is.
Help America Vote Act, which was passed in response to the debacle in Florida with the hanging chads and Mitch McConnell and Bob Ney, some of the architects of HAVA, basically came out and said, well, we need computerized elections because that will prevent the embarrassment of all this, you know, what happened in Florida. And John Conyers bought it hook, line, and sinker, basically on the idea that it would increase turnout, which is, you know, should hand us a laugh because the Republicans have done nothing to try to increase turnout. They've done pretty much everything to suppress turnout for the better part of a century. So the idea that they were altruistically bringing in this legislation, these computers to increase turnout was ludicrous. They brought in the computers because they basically owned the computer firms which were going to be getting all these contracts, Diebold and ES&S, and they had operational control of the programming of the computers for these elections. And let me just say, you know, just so people can understand how simple it is and how vulnerable it is, when you put your ballot into an optical scanner, there's a memory card inside that optical scanner, and it both is programmed to read the ballot, you know, and spatially read where the check marks are, et cetera, and also tally the votes. And there's about 500,000 plus lines of code on that memory card to enable it to do this. Well, if you interpolate in there about three or four lines of code, you can set the zero counters on the memory card to plus X minus X, let's say plus 50 minus 50. Take Wisconsin, you know, plus 50 for Scott Walker, minus 50 for Mary Burke at a given precinct. Well, at the end of the night, the election administrator sees the right total number of votes because you've added 50 and subtracted 50. It matches the poll tapes, says, okay, good, clean election. And you've just shifted 100 votes per machine, or if you so desire, 200 votes or 300 votes per machine. Wholesale theft. I mean, this is, you know, this is not having somebody vote twice or pretend to be somebody else, retail one at a time, a vote here, a vote there. I mean, if you remember Chuck Herron, the Republican IT professional who was on the film interviewed for Stealing America, Vote by Vote, you know, he quite brilliantly put it. He said, you know, it takes a long time to change 10,000 votes by hand. It takes 3 seconds to do it in a computer. So that's what we're facing. I mean, the opportunity, the vulnerability is so manifest, and the control and ownership of these machines is so partisan. And then we get these red flags that show that, surprise, lo and behold, these vote counts keep coming out to the right of every baseline we have, even when those baselines have been attempted to be adjusted so that they don't get elections wrong. In an election like this two Tuesdays ago, they still got it wrong, and they got it wrong by a lot. The red shift of the U.S. House vote was 6.1%, and I mean, I know that's just a number, but I will say that that number was bigger than for any election that we've measured since the year 2000, and it translates to about 4+ million votes nationally. Well, if you have 4 million stolen votes to play with, and you can target that to the competitive House races, you can all but run the table, which is exactly what the Republicans did in 2010. It's exactly what they did in 2014. And I just want to, you know, conclude this by saying that doing that, rigging an election, has a primary effect and a secondary effect. The primary effect is you put your people in office. But the secondary effect is that the party, the candidates, the people that you've supposedly defeated go about looking for a new strategy on the assumption that their strategy failed. So you send the opposing, your opponents and the opposing party into complete disarray, and you completely disrupt their strategy because they're going under the assumption that they pursued a certain strategy and it legitimately wound up in not just a defeat but a rout, when that, the evidence seems to be that that was not actually the case. And so you affect, there's a huge secondary effect and a huge ripple effect through the entire political system of the country, and you see something very similar to what we're seeing now, which is the Democrats, you know, basically forming a circular firing squad, screaming at one another, no, you did wrong, no, you did wrong, we should have done this, we should have done that, when in fact they probably won.
Ha! That's an amazing thing to hear. We're talking to John Simon, author of Code Red, about his new book about a computerized election theft, and I want to get into the detail on that. But what we want to know, and Bob Fitrakis, my co-author on six books on election protection, is on with us. But John Simon, and then Bob, if you'll follow up, do the Democrats, have the Democrats at any time since the theft of the 2000 presidential election by George W. Bush, or on behalf of George W. Bush over Al Gore, have they at all taken seriously the idea that these elections have been stolen?
Short answer, no. I've addressed this at some length in Code Red. You know, generally, there are a number of reasons, some of which are psychological, some of which are institutional. The one that you hear most often is that they are terrified that their constituency, which is sort of hard to, you know, turn out and bring to the polls, or at least that's the way it seems, as it is, will be completely turned off, especially minority voters and young voters, if they are clued into the fact that elections are being rigged, they will have all the more reason to stay home. So Democrats believe that, you know, if you put them on truth serum and you got them in private, some of them would probably say, geez, yeah, these results really look funny, and they have looked funny for a long time, and we don't know what the hell is going on. And you know what? We don't want to know, and we don't want you to tell anybody, because then all our voters will stay home, and we'll really lose. They think that they can beat whatever rigs are put in there with GOTV, get out the vote. Election 2014 should be pretty conclusive that at least in off-year elections, not presidential elections, but the off-year elections, that's a fallacy. They cannot beat the rig with get out the vote. And it's also become a lot clearer what the strategy of Karl Rove and company was. And that was, you know, public attention was focused in, and is focused in this country almost always, on the presidential contest. But if you start from the bottom up and you take over the state legislatures, those races have no exit polls. They most of the time have no pre-election polls to speak of. They have nothing. They have no baselines. They have no scrutiny. Hell, you can't even find the returns for those races on networks, on CBS or anything like that. You have to go to local newspapers. Can't even find out the vote counts, let alone anything to compare them with. Well, you start with those, you take over state houses in states like Michigan and Ohio and Pennsylvania and Virginia and Iowa, et cetera, et cetera. You gerrymander, you rewrite the rules of election administration, and you can basically lock in your permanent majority. I mean, Rove put it right out there. That was what he was after, was a permanent Republican rule. And instead of starting from the presidency, you start at the other end where there's the least scrutiny, and that, when you look back historically, the elections of 2006, 2010, 2014, the down-ballot races in all these elections, that's what was done. And I have to say, it's later than the vast majority of people think or realize. I mean, this is locked in virtually according to plan, permanently, the next step being to subject the presidency to gerrymandering, And there's really nothing to stop them from doing that. And then basically everything is under Republican control, and you have a small and shrinking minority basically controlling a country. It sounds a lot like Burma or a third world country. And, you know, the sooner we get clued in to what's going on, the better.
We're talking with John Simon, author of Code Pink. Code Red, I'm sorry, about election theft in the United States. Bob Fitrakis, you and I are always asked, why don't the Democrats deal with this issue? And John put forth a beginning of an answer. You have had direct experience with the Democratic Party in Ohio. Why will the Democrats not deal at all with the issue of election theft?
Well, you know, I had one high-level operative, I promise not the name, said they can't steal it if we win by double digits. And, you know, my point to him is, why would you have to win by at least 10 points in order to win an election? What is it, some gentleman's handicap? You know, I've also had a guy who had worked in the General Wesley Clark campaign, who admitted that, you know, if we had the technology, we'd use it. The problem is they beat us to the computer technology. And the key thing that Jonathan points out that's correct is that Karl Rove strategically and the apparatus that thinks about these things, people like Rove, the first thing they did in Ohio, and we really didn't understand it, although Cliff Arnebeck and I, and Cliff led the fight here, you know, as an Ohio attorney, the first thing they went after was the Supreme Court of Ohio in 2000, 2002, and 2004. They took a Supreme Court that was 4-3 Republican, but one of the Republicans, Andy Douglas, was actually pro-labor and liberal on social issues. So you had a swing court in a swing state. By 2004, when we went before the Supreme Court to tell them about the stolen election in Ohio, the court was 6-1 Republican, 5 of them hardcore conservative Republicans. They had laundered $6 million to a front group tied to the Chamber of Commerce. And then the interesting part is we actually proved that to the Ohio Elections Commission. We won there. Cliff Arnebeck argued and won that case. I was helping him on the case. And what happened in the Ohio Election Commission? The Republicans had changed the law. So they awarded us, you know, the harshest penalty possible, a $1,000 fine to the front group that illegally laundered $6 million and stole the Ohio Supreme Court. We got the harshest legal measure, no attorney's fees, and the $1,000 fine for the money launderers that stole the Supreme Court and then ruled that we had no case in 2004.
So the Ohio Supreme Court now is flat out overwhelmingly Republican. The question is, and let's see if we can get to the bottom of this. Bob, a reporter from Mother Jones after 2004 called the Ohio Democratic Party in Central Ohio and asked him about election theft. Tell us about that.
Oh, when the Mother Jones reporter came in, the problem is that he didn't even come in, at least the guy nominally associated with the Nation showed up and the Nation didn't publish stuff. But what happened is you call, you know, you meet with one Democratic Party source and you ask them, you know, is there election theft going on? And they, of course, deny it. But, you know, why do they deny it? Because they're afraid, as Jonathan pointed out, if you admit somebody is programming, that's what they're doing. They're using private, for-profit, partisan companies that they control to program the election results. You know, first they suppress the vote by the millions, and then they get it close enough so they can shift the vote. So they suppress and they shift. And this is a time-honored tactic perfected by the CIA in overseas elections. They just, that which they used to do covertly during the Cold War, they're now pretty much doing overtly in the U.S., and nobody wants to call them on it. Nobody wants to call into question, except perhaps Jimmy Carter, that there appears to be voter theft going on in the rigging of elections. Jonathan talked about the 2002 exit polling. That was done by Battelle. Battelle is also the institute that works with the CIA and is in charge of biochemical, including the anthrax tests in the United States and the stockpile of all biological weapons in America. That's the people they got, friends of the Bush family, to do the exit polls in 2002, Battelle Memorial Institute.
We are talking with Bob Fitrakis and Jonathan Simon, John Simon. We're going to take a short break here and continue this. I want to talk to John in particular, but also Bob, about what's happened in some key states like Massachusetts, of all places, where we wound up with a Republican governor. And we will, and the I want to talk about the mechanisms of rigging the computers as well. We're going to take a three-minute break here. We're going to hear the Rocky Top version of the Solartopia song, and we'll be back with John Simon and Bob Fitrakis. Yeah, that was Dana Lyons singing the Solartopia Rocky Top version. Dana of Cows with Guns fame, more than 2 million hits on YouTube. We're back with two of the great experts on election theft in the United States, John Simon. You're in Boston, right, John?
Yeah, in the Boston area.
And Bob Fitrakis here in Columbus, Ohio. My two home ports. I was born in Boston and live now in Columbus, Ohio. So we have fans of all sports teams from all over the place. John, I want you to talk, if you would, please, about this stunning outcome of the 2014 election in Massachusetts, of all places. What is the situation there?
Well, you know, in fact, it was less stunning, I think, than it would appear. I actually doubt that the Massachusetts governorship was rigged. I don't think it would be on the national rigging radar. And in fact, the Democrats held on to all 9 seats in the Massachusetts U.S. House delegation. I think in this particular case, unlike the Coakley Brown case, the special Senate election in 2010. The Massachusetts governorship really doesn't have national significance. It doesn't really fit in to the plan. And the idea behind a rigging plan is that you know, it's very strategic, and it's very much the algorithm is that you don't take more votes than you need, and you don't go after elections that you don't need, because the idea is to keep the sucker in the game. You don't want to be too over the top or too brazen.
The sucker in this case being the American public.
I'm sorry? Yes, the sucker is the American public and the other party and the candidates. And there's no particular need to win 435 House seats. A bare majority will do you just fine. And so the Massachusetts election was probably more of a function of Coakley had some pretty high negatives, pretty high unpopularities. And
this is Martha Coakley, the Democratic candidate
Attorney
for
General
governorship,
of Massachusetts,
who managed to lose Teddy Kennedy's seat to Scott Brown.
Right.
And absolutely, I was in
Although that election was very, very red flag. There was very strong evidence. I wrote a paper, you know, on that that is included in the appendix of Code Red, where it was making comparisons with votes that are hand counted. There are still a fair number of votes hand counted in Massachusetts, believe it or not, and that's actually what the paper was called, believe it or not. And it was about the Senate race in 2010. That one was pretty strong evidence was stolen. That one was highly strategic. It was the 60th vote in the Senate for the Democrats, so it took away their ability to override filibusters and end filibusters, et cetera. So this one really didn't have that significance, and the Globe actually endorsed the Republican, which was kind of a the coup de grace. What I would like to get at, though, since it really does sound like we're just complaining a lot, well, you know, it's unfair, blah, blah, blah. What are we after? What are we really after? Let's say we're all wet. Let's say we're all wrong about all this actual fraud and that all our analysis, there's some alternative explanation that would explain it all, and it really hasn't been rigged, and, we're all this mountain of evidence going back all these elections is somehow invalid. What's the worst that could happen? Well, we're not asking to rerun previous elections. We're not asking to unseat any office holders. What we're asking is going forward to have an election, we'll start with one, in which the votes are counted observably in public. That would be the worst consequence. If we're all wet and we're all wrong and there really isn't all that much of a crisis or an emergency, at the very worst, we'd have elections that were more secure and more legitimate. And that's what we need to demand. Not arguing that Bush wasn't president or shouldn't have been president. I mean, that's water under the bridge. It's what about our next election? And in fact, you know, our next elections will be subject to this, the structural fruit of the poison tree. If we are right about the elections that have been rigged, and the gerrymandering and the voter ID laws and all those things have come about because of majorities that were installed probably by illegitimate elections. Nonetheless, we'll take it. I mean, I personally would say, just give us a shot at an election where the votes are counted observably in public. You can keep your gerrymandering and your Citizens United and your voter ID laws and all these various thumbs on the scale. We'll take our chances with them. Just let us count the frickin' votes. And when I say let us count the frickin' votes, I mean the public, the citizenry, in public view, as opposed to in the pitch dark of partisan programmed cyberspace. Let us just do that, and let's see where the chips fall. And that's what we're talking about.
Well, are you saying, and Bob Fitrakis, jump in on this. Well, let's talk about this. Are you, John Simon and Bob Fitrakis, saying that the computer election machines, which have spread across the country like a virus since 2000 and 2002, are physically rigged? And what is the mechanism for rigging these election machines?
It doesn't matter. As an international election observer, it doesn't matter. All the evidence suggests they're rigged, and the rigging is linked to the Bush family and Karl Rove and company. What matters is Jonathan's right here. We're counting votes in a non-verifiable, non-transparent way. I mean, people got to think of these, you know, these thumb drives and these personal ballot devices, PBDs, as essentially somebody grabbing the ballot box, going into, you know, a back room. You know, I mean, that's the problem. In the old days, you know, when the mob was down in local 337 in Detroit and grabbed the ballot box and went in the back room and was non-transparent and came out and announced, you know, the winners, who were working for Jimmy Hoffa, everyone knew it was rigged. Now we have total non-transparency, private, for-profit, partisan companies secretly counting and programming computers, which everyone understands are hackable and programmable, and to raise the issue, they call you crazy, even though the election results suggest that somebody is cooking the books. All we are demanding is transparency. Again, when I was in El Salvador in 1994 during the first election in that country's history, one thing they could agree on, you get a clear box that everyone can see into. You fold the ballots and mark them, the people do, and then you put them in the box and you count them in front of each other, because neither side, none of the parties, the guerrillas, the fascist arena, the Christian Democrats, none of them trust each other. What solves that problem? Transparency. Could you imagine if the fascist arena comes in and goes, no big deal, our guys who give us money, who are totally loyal, are going to program the computers and then secretly count it, and there'll be no way to really verify any of this. It would have started a new civil war, and it should start a civil war here.
Well, John Simon, Bob Fitrakis has just now put forward the idea that the computerized voting machines in this country are somehow rigged. Tell us how they do it, if they do it.
Well, first of all, I couldn't agree more with what Bob said. You know, I wish I could state it that clearly myself.
Well, your book is pretty good, John, and you're a hell of a writer, so let's not put yourself down.
Thanks.
Bob Fitrakis is extremely articulate
but Bob
and has really done the groundwork on this, and you're pretty good at it, too. So tell us now the mechanism. How do they rig these machines?
Okay. I will first off give the disclaimer that I am not an IT person, and I do not get into zeros and ones by the trillions and be able to make head or tail out of them. I just have, I guess, an imagination, you know, about, well, you know, what would I order up? How would I go about this? And there are many, many ways to rig machines. I mean, we've looked at, you know, altering ballot definition programs so that, you know, the ballot reader, so that if there's a stray, certain machines are more sensitive to stray marks on the ballot and invalidate those ballots. And then you ship those to your opponent's, you know, strongholds. You know, that's one way. But by far the easiest way, and I referred to it before, is you just offset the zero counters. I mean, you know, the thing is, if you're counting ballots on a table in public, it's pretty clear what zero is. Zero is the table. And ballot number one is the first ballot that you put on the table, followed by ballot number two, three, four. In a computer, zero doesn't really exist. There is no such thing as zero. There is no table. So you can start your count on that memory card anywhere. The only limits are good taste. You could start it at positive 500,000 if you wanted. And then your first ballot would be 500,001. Those zero counters have to be set. That table has to be put somewhere. And it takes two, three, four lines of code, as I said, out of over 500,000 lines of code. If you actually manage to steal one of those memory cards, kind of been wondering why somebody hasn't pulled that off yet, and send it to somebody who had IT chops, a professional, an expert, my understanding is it would take weeks of careful poring over the code to find that little interpolation. But you can set those zero counters to plus X minus X, as I said before, plus 100 minus 100. So there you have a machine sitting in a precinct someplace. And the first vote, let's do, you know, Scott Walker and his opponent Burke, you know, up in Wisconsin. First vote for Scott Walker becomes vote 101. And the first vote for Mary Burke becomes vote minus 99. Well,
yes, and we had this actually happen in Volusia County in Florida in 2000, where suddenly Al Gore was missing about 14,000 votes or so. What Bob Fitrakis and John Simon, have we ever had a smoking gun? I mean, a lot of the speculation or accusation on the rigging of the voting machines is based on outcome. Have we red-handedly caught anybody actually rigging one of these machines?
Well, I mean, Miami County in Ohio in 2004 admitted there were unexplained votes caused from the computer tallies on an OptiScan machine. In fact, there's a 17-page report that was written by Pete Pekarsky, a graduate of MIT, Ron Bayman, a statistical expert, and myself, right? We spent weeks up there. And the great oddity, there was a Republican executive director up there, and he was determined to show us, because, you know, he thought we were ridiculous, that the count was right. So he got out his little chips, and he installed them back in, and we counted all the ballots, and then we counted them, you know, we put in the tally machine, and lo and behold, there was a shift of 1,250 ballots from essentially Kerry to Bush. There was the way they did it was brilliant. There were two machines. There was two of these OptiScans, machine one, machine two. Each of them had six precincts. There was 12 precincts. You know, so you had precinct 101. Those were the absentee ballots. Machine 201, those are the absentee ballots. Then you had, right, one of two precinct, two of two. So we go through the whole thing, and then we put it in the, you know, we put the little counting chips, you know, the equivalent of the thumb drives, into the machine for the final vote tally. And lo and behold, precinct seven, a non-existent precinct, pops up for machine one and machine two. And they're stealing about 1,250 votes, a shift of 2,500 votes to Bush. And there is no precinct seven, right? Is that in Concord Southwest, the precinct, where they claim 98.55% of the people voted. Nobody voted absentee in the area. No one voted provisional. Only 549 people signed in. We got the list. But the machine recorded 679 voters. It literally, as if it were an algorithm, was adding, based on the size of the precinct, between, you know, as little as three votes, as many as 30-something votes, depending. It literally was manufacturing votes into a non-existent precinct, but you could only see it if you isolated the central tabulator. It wasn't showing on the ballot cards, and it wasn't showing on the original machine.
John Simon, have you now Bob went in. Bob Fitrakis went into this particular precinct with himself being an attorney, with another high-powered attorney, Pete Pekarsky, and a statistician, Ron Bayman, and it took him weeks to sort this out. Have you encountered any other specific instances where you could prove that the voting machines were in fact manipulated?
You know, that is not my strong suit. It's not something that I have the chops for, and you know, there's been a certain amount of debate about the value of proving election theft or election fraud, you know, by all our various statistical means, which is my strong suit, being able to do it according to outcomes. But I haven't gotten access to a memory card. Things tightened up a lot after 2004 because that came pretty close, and you know, you guys would know better than I do because of the lawsuit there and Mike Connell, and it came pretty damn close to blowing the cover of the whole thing. And since then, everything's been more difficult to get. Unadjusted exit polls, cooperation from the pollsters, you know, God knows, memory cards or cooperation from election administrators. So it's become more difficult. And in fact, The burden of proof here is really reversed. I mean, if we step back a little bit, you know, the idea that we have to go and prove that a secret counting system and a partisan-owned and operated secret counting system is somehow counting false, rather than have the system demonstrate to the public that it is counting true, that's a reversal of the burden of proof. I mean, we basically give the vote counting system in this country a complete free pass. And that's what's inherently absurd. I mean, the idea that we have to chase around after elections with a forensic pooper scooper and try to find these smoking guns and whatnot is absurd. I mean, we have a counting system which on the face of it is taking place in the pitch dark. It is no different from handing your ballot to a man who goes behind the curtain, as Bob was alluding to, and comes out and tells you who won. I will go on record, I have cast my last ballot in the United States of America until and unless my ballot, at the very least, is counted observably. I will not go down. I regard it as hypocritical to make these claims about the system and then go down and stick my ballot into that optical scanner, calf to slaughter. So I won't be voting anymore until the ballots are counted observably. How we get there, that's a whole another show. That's difficult. I hope that my book, Code Red, will serve as a vehicle. I would like to sell a million copies or more, which is rather... you might regard that as diluted, but I believe that the iron is hot and the time is right, even more so than in 2004. I believe there are millions and millions and tens of millions of people out there perplexed and angry and just not believing what they're seeing and suspicious of this system at this point. Whether they're articulating it to each other or not, that's the impression I get from a lot of people. They could use a book that is, accessible, that doesn't make the eyes glaze over, and that lays all this out in a way that tells the story, talks about the motivations, talks about the evidence, talks about the vulnerability, and suggests ways out of it. So, you know, I put in a plug for it. It's available in print and Kindle on Amazon, hold your nose. I will be putting out a post-2014 sort of an addendum to it, a revise, but even in the form that it is now, it covers a lot of this ground. And I really think that, you know, if people, and we're gonna, I'm gonna go all in. I'm gonna put a lot.
Well, here we got you. Got to do it very quickly. I want to give Bob the last word.
Yeah,
so John,
okay.
Give us in 30 seconds the basic message that you want to convey.
The basic message is there's a lot of consciousness to raise. So much consciousness to be raised, and so little time. If we're going to have a foundation for the kind of public movement that populist and public, where we are able to make these demands, because there are so many inertias within the system that this isn't going to happen through normal political course of events. It's going to be the public, really the equivalent of storming the Bastille, I hope peacefully, but through whatever means to make it clear that we must have observable counting of votes in this country if we're going to continue calling it a democracy.
Okay, very good. Thank you, John Simon, author of Code Red. Bob, the last word for you. Bob Fitrakis, my co-author on 6 books on election protection. Bob, are you still there? I guess Bob went off to cast his ballot.
Yeah, are you there?
There's Bob.
Hello. Yeah.
Real quick, got to wrap up, Bob.
Yeah, if people need to know, in the books you'll see an actual chart where they sent the vote total of Ohio in 2004 to Chattanooga, Tennessee, and allowed private evangelical preacher to count that vote, Harvey.
All right, we can't have that happen again. Once and again, an hour has flown by. John Simon, thanks for being with us. Bob Fitrakis, as always, let's get hand-counted paper ballots, or we do not have a democracy. We'll see you next week. Thank you, crew in New York, for a great show. We'll see you next week on the Zoetopia Green Power and Wellness Show.
The cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.